always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Starliner astronauts return to Earth in a splashdown along Florida's Gulf Coast and are being evaluated. CBS's Mark Strassman.
They've been through a rigorous experience, and now they're going through a significant adjustment. So with any luck, they're doing just fine, and they'll be home to their families, sleeping in their own beds for the first time in months. They'll be doing that in a couple of days.
After a phone call with President Trump, Russia's president says he'd halt strikes on Ukrainian energy infrastructures. But Stephen Pfeiffer with the Center for International Security and Cooperation says
this war of the last few years, it's been mainly a ground war. And Putin did not say that he was prepared to end that fighting or cease that fighting.
Israel abandons its ceasefire, saying a renewed offensive in Gaza is to ensure the release of hostages held by Hamas. The BBC's Amir Noder.
The Israeli government, at the beginning of March, began to halt all aid going into Gaza as a way to try and eke further concessions out of Hamas. Israel wants to delay the negotiations for a permanent ceasefire.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Hi, this is Beth, inviting you to join me for The Kitchen's Open, the show within the show, each Monday morning at 9 a.m. on The Morning Show on WFHR.
The Bucks hit the road. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks begin a long road trip, playing five different teams out west over the next 10 days. Tonight, they face the Golden State Warriors. College basketball, while Wisconsin and Marquette get ready for March Madness later this week, the Badger football team's spring practices are underway in Madison. Head coach Luke Fickell talked about the team's offense with a new coordinator, a new quarterback, and a lot of new players.
Obviously, day one, I think most important thing is efficiency to what we're trying to do. Right? I mean, there's a lot of new offense. I mean that in people. I mean that in just, you know, making sure we understand how we got to do things together. I think we're a little bit further along than, you know, I've really kind of spent a lot of time in football the last month and a half, 2 months, with just some walkthroughs and things, not just training and things like that, but doing a lot of football. And that's going to be real important to us.
That's the Badgers football coach, Luke Fickell, with sports. Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Madness.
Blackwell inside, and he sends it down with the right hand.
Starts.
Tanjay with bad intentions.
Now.
Long three, left side, bucket.
It's the NCAA Tournament. Join us Thursday, live from Denver, Colorado. It's Wisconsin and Montana. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Wisconsin basketball.
To the rim, slam dunk, Carter Gilmore.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. It's been another weird week. Trump doubles tariffs on Canada and another round of maybe tariff, maybe not tariff, maybe tariff again, psych, maybe not tariff. Who knows? Evidently, childhood diseases like chickenpox and measles are back. We're seeing tuberculosis, seeing a resurgence. And the head of Health and Human Services? Well, evidently the measles outbreak is due to poor diet. Yeah. And speaking of poor diet, we're making hunger great again. Yeah. According to Politico, the USDA, they are canceling $1 billion worth of funding for food banks and schools to buy food from local farms and ranchers. You know, the stuff that actually matters to the farming community, rural America. Wonder how they're going to take that. Also, border agents. We're making sexual harassment great again, evidently, because to get into the country, we've got an agent who took some initiative. He looked up how to translate the phrase, "I will need you to lift your shirt and your bra also, please." And to verify, "I will need you to lift your shirt, please." Yeah, we're evidently one of the criteria to get into the country. You know it. You know. The thing, you know, the things that, you know. And oh, by the way, Texas. Evidently, Texas wants to make identifying as trans a felony. They're calling it gender identity fraud. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's only getting better. It's only getting better. The House also passed on a party line vote a bill to avoid a government shutdown. All the Republicans, with the exception of Kentucky Representative Thomas Massie, voted for this giant screw job of the American working class, and the Democrats voted against it. Thomas Massie in hot water. Evidently, Trump is going to go after Massie. And I'm sure with Elon's money, and I'm sure you've seen the story that Elon wants a government shutdown because, you know, we can get rid of that wasteful government. Just shut it off and never start it back up again because, you know, who needs it? Now, what's funny is Axios is reporting that the Trump folks think everything is going just peachy keen and great. It's fabulous. They reported that Trump's team remains confident and aggressive and contends not a minute has been wasted, even when Trump is up at, you know, the crack of dawn doing whatever that is he does on his social media platform. Now, they think the first 50 days couldn't possibly have gone any better. So understand where you go, hey, this is chaotic. Understand where, hey, this is just Trump being, no, this is planned. This is well thought out. This is well executed. We talked about it. Project 2025. Yeah, we did. We talked about it quite often. And we knew the chaos was coming. A lot of people didn't believe it. And that's the weird thing. A lot of those people who didn't bother to vote, they didn't believe it. No, it'll be just like it was the last time. I was saying, no, it's going to be much worse because the moneyed interest, they see a way of destroying literally the what's left of the 20th century. Everything that built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity, they are targeting and going after. Everything that holds capital in check, they are going after. Everything that is stopping the titans of industry from being the kings and princes and the oligarchs that they want to be is being dismantled. And now you see the story that Elon Musk's going to put $100 million into Trump's, whatever, these groups that they've got set up to go out and spread their propaganda. You know, fund a lot of these podcasts, fund a lot of media, fund the things that you're seeing every day. And look, they're good at it. They're great at it because they got a lot of money. Evidently, Elon's going to give them $100 million, $280 million into the campaign. Elon's spending a boatload of cash because he understands return on investment. He's taking a hit now and people are celebrating. Look what happens when we decide to boycott Tesla. That's not going to be long, and he knows that. He knows the American people's attention span are about as long as, well, that of a gnat. We kind of have historic amnesia. We kind of forget because we go back to living life, and that's what they're planning on. They're planning on destroying literally the 20th century and returning it back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. We're going back to another robber baron era, only this time they're going to do it right. They're going to continue to hold on to control. And how are they going to do that? Well, by making us more desperate. And I'm sure you saw Elon Musk's clip on the Kudlow Fox Business show about eliminating, you know, entitlements. His quote was, most of the federal spending is entitlements. So that's the one big one to eliminate. That's sort of half a trillion, maybe $600-700 billion. And you go, those were promises made by we the people to each other. Those were promises made that we funded, that our tax dollars funded. Because we had Republicans and a handful of Democrats who over the last 40, 50 years have had this tax cut fetish where we need to feed the wealthy even more so they can have money to fill the campaign coffers. What's happened is they're now like, you know what? We want what's left. And I like what, you know, I don't like it, but I agree with what former Social Security Administration Commissioner Martin O'Malley had to say. He said they're trying to break this agency in order to turn the public against it so they can privatize it, liquidate it, and steal at least a portion or all of the $2.7 trillion that's in the fund right now. He's saying, look, right now, people should rise up to hold on to your Social Security. They're telegraphing what they're doing. So when they have mass layoffs at the Social Security Administration, why do you think they're doing that? Do you think that the salaries are going to amount to much? No. What they're doing is they're putting another roadblock between you and your Social Security. Now, we had a guest, you know, last week or earlier in the week, who talked about her mother trying to get through to Social Security. Couldn't do it. Still having a hard time getting through. Why? Nobody there. And this is the plan. Understand, none of this is going to go well for working people. They are in the process of uprooting the economy that we know in ways that we cannot even fathom yet. And Wall Street's freaking out. I am not a big supporter of Wall Street. Generally don't care what happens to them. Unless the bottom falls out, the daily vicissitudes of the market, I'm not hung up on. But they're freaking out because they get what this administration and Doge Boy and the rest of them are doing is going to be extremely harmful, not just to working people, and it will be, but to everybody except the very, very well-connected and wealthy. And, you know, it may quite well trigger a recession. Now, the weird thing is we were doing pretty well. We had that soft landing that everyone talked about during the Biden years. Because if you remember, you go back to the Republicans, every week there was a new congressman coming out saying recession's around the corner because of all of this obscene spending. Well, they're pulling that money back out of the economy. And we'll see where they're taking it from. Much like I said, you know, the USDA. I got to wonder, some farmers, some ranchers, some folks who that's their business. $1 billion is a lot of money. Funds a lot of small family farmers. Because they're generally the ones who need that. The big corporate guys, they don't care. So as we dismantle all of those levers that government did to keep certain groups functional, because there's more to government than just running it like a business. And we've talked about this before, this idea of, I just want government to run like a business. Well, you're seeing it. They are going to slash and burn and fire people left and right. They are going to slash and burn programs. Doesn't matter who it hurts, who it harms, children, veterans. We're seeing with veterans. Used to be the third rail of politics, along with Social Security. Never touched that. Now they've figured out a way to get people to go, Social Security's a Ponzi scam. Social Security is a pay it forward, a pay as you go system. You're taking care of the people who are retiring now, with the belief that it's they're going to take care of you. What they've done successfully, and you got to give them credit, they've done it successfully. With, you know, a couple of years ago, they were running on the, you know, I'm going to see a UFO before I see a Social Security check. And you go, yeah, if you keep doing what you're doing and failing to address the actual problems we've had for a long time, we've seen what's coming come. We've seen it. And our elected leaders, Republicans, for the most part, have done nothing. And this is where the hope is we wake up. Now, where my mind is none of this changes until we do have that recession. Just so we're clear on where, sadly, my mindset is. I don't think, and this is, you know, borne out by history in this country, I don't think we come back together. I don't think we reunite until there's real chaos, until there's real pain and suffering, until a real large recession hits and millions of people have to pay for it. I hate saying that. I hate feeling that way. I hate believing that. But it seems that's what it's going to take. And it's the only way the red hats, the rural folks, and in our example, the only way I think they're going to come around and say, look, we need to unite and move forward. I wish there were a better way. And if you've got thoughts, I really want to hear it. But the fear is recession's around the corner. And that, I got to tell you, is not good for us. So when we come back, Bucknell Economics Professor Mateus Vernango is going to be here to share some thoughts on the possibility of recession and what that means. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Just got to tell you, I agree with Mark Cuban. This is how recession starts. When you see the kind of deep cuts that are being proposed, the Doge, I just can't get my head around that we've already put that into our language, this idiocy. But these kind of abrupt and deep cuts, I think Cuban's right. This is how recessions start. And here to share some thoughts on whether we may see a recession, is the Atlanta Fed right, moving us potentially in that direction? Or you know, maybe we're on the right track. That's why I've asked my good friend Mateus Vernango to share some thoughts. He's a professor of economics at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Rick.
So what do you make of Cuban's comments? You know, to me, it makes sense. If government spending drops, if we start pulling money out of certain areas, you know, especially when you're talking about seniors and home health care and nursing homes and all that, spending could drop. That this could have a negative snowball effect. Or am I missing something?
No, should. It will. If they do that, no doubt. So if they go through with the significant cuts, large cuts, and you know, in order to say perhaps maintain Trump's tax cuts more permanently for the very wealthy, that definitely would lead to a recession. So I have no doubt about that. The only thing that I would say is we have 1 month of evidence. So the short-term data of the government, the Treasury spending, that sort of payment system that Doge, talking about idiocy that we allowed to get into not just our lexicon, but also into the government and doing terrible things. So the data, this payment system, that payment system allow us to see what's going on. And admittedly, we only have January. January was very early on that, so we haven't seen the February data. But the Economist magazine had some analysis of the data, and you know, it doesn't show yet a reduction in spending. We have reduced spending on certain things. They stop payments of many things. They stop payments of, aid policy, to foreign countries, several things that they decided to stop. They just stopped payments to Columbia University, NIH spending. But they have spent on other things and at the same pace. So they gave contracts to Elon Musk. Surprise. I wonder why. And that kind of stuff. So the overall spending being maintained may keep the economy going. It doesn't mean it doesn't have consequences. It doesn't mean that we're on the right track. It's a terrible track. We're cutting spending of essential things that work the working class, help the working class, and spending on things that help, corporate interests. So even if that's the only thing that happens, we are on the wrong track, and it may have significant consequences for the American economy, increasing inequality that is already very high, and so on and so forth. What I would be is, at this point, a little bit more skeptical and being sure that we're getting into recession. I think it's not impossible. But certainly not sure yet, and we have to see what they're going to do.
No, this is where I'm with Cuban, and this is how recessions start. If you're doing these things, you know, I'm not predicting. I'm not going to do like the Republicans did the entire Biden administration, where next week a recession is going to hit. But this is the kind of stuff that sets the table for that, because you know the reports this week were coming out that you know businesses are preparing to see cuts that are going to affect, you know, downwind. So the funding that, you know, we would have had on defense or, you know, name the industry, you know, employers are going, hey, we might have to cut back because we're not going to have the money. Communities like Parkersburg, West Virginia, the Reuters story, you know, are seeing people who, you know, overwhelmingly West Virginia is the largest state of employees, of federal employees. When those people lose their jobs, small businesses feel that. So there's a downward ripple. And even if it's not actually happening, I fear that they're preparing for it. And just that preparation could move us in that direction.
Yes, but you know, again, so I completely agree. I think you're absolutely correct. Those people will make adjustments, are already making adjustments. We lost in the last employment report that came, BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we created 150,000 jobs, but you know, 10,000 less in the federal sector, and manufacturing is not doing well either. So if you're a manufacturing firm, you probably will sort of start thinking whether you have to hire more workers or if you have to shed some workers. And in many places, they'll have and will shed some workers and are already thinking, I'm not buying certain things because I'm not going to have to grow and so on and so forth. But if the level of spending continues overall, that means that somebody else is, you know, that wasn't making some adjustments because their demand is going to grow. Elon Musk is probably doing fine, not the Tesla. But, you know, the
Starlink,
yes. So those things are doing well. So because he got this contract. And so it depends a little bit. I'll say a lot of the, what was stark about the Atlanta Fed prediction, which was out of line with other predictions. So I think we were already slowing down. And this slowdown, I think, was, you know, predictable given all of the terrible sort of discussions, not just Republicans, but the certain groups, the more neoliberal groups within the Democratic Party. I don't want to say Larry Summers, but I'll bring up Larry Summers, that kept complaining that the fiscal packages of Biden had been too much when they weren't, and that they caused inflation, which they didn't, because inflation was caused by something else. And that they caused the defeat in the election, which I don't think they did. I think that that's sort of another issue. It's 40 years of, you know, making the life of working class people sort of harder. But, you know, having said all of that, the logic of this slowdown was associated with the fact that we were pressing the government to spend less, to be more cautious, and to spend including on things that would have been good for the American economy. And I think that it's, you know, expected to grow less, but the Atlanta Fed said it's going to fall by 2.8, they said a couple of days ago, and yesterday, I think, or a couple of days ago, they said 2.4. And a lot of that is because there is one important piece of information. They saw in the actual data a lot of increase in imports, and the increase in imports decreased GDP. Because it's demand not of domestic goods, it's demand of foreign goods.
Right.
And so it's a negative and sort of brings down GDP. And that's correct. I'm sure that happened. You know, it's in the data. But part of that is because they're anticipating the tariffs. So here you have some of the uncertainty created by Trump. So the tariffs are going to happen. So I import before the tariffs happen. But of course, what they're not necessarily measuring in this Atlanta Fed thing is, if I'm importing now, sure, that decreases GDP. But it's, you know, I'm the importer. I have them as, you know, inventories of stuff that I'll eventually sell later. And inventories is an investment which increases GDP. So I'm less sure that we're going to have a collapse of GDP. So that I would rule out. What we may have is a recession. And the recession is not just possible because of they may cut spending a lot. It's also because they're going to spend more on wealthy people that don't spend that much. So working class people, when they receive their money, they go and spend it because they need to. So I think that the distributive impact is sort of a negative. I think also that the important thing to bear in mind in what they're doing is that the Fed, you know, a couple of weeks ago decided not to reduce the interest rate. They stopped it. Why? Because they're afraid of tariffs and the inflationary effect that they might have. And so they reduced the rhythm at which they were starting to, decrease the interest rates, which, again, it's terrible for the working class people, for anybody that has debts, for consumption, and so on and so forth. So I, far from me to say that the macroeconomy is in good shape. He received a stellar macroeconomy, one of the fastest recoveries we have had in a very, very long time. And he may very well, throw us into a recession. I don't think we will immediately go to a collapse. What he will certainly, these are, I'll sign under and say, this will happen in the next four years. He will do policies that for sure will increase inequality, that will, make the life of people at the bottom much, much harder. He will make harder for people that are in difficulty to get, Medicaid, to get SNAP, to get food stamps, to get unemployment insurance. All of those things will happen. It's not a more or less. So the life of people at the bottom, several that voted for him, will have a much more difficult sort of situation.
No, I absolutely 100% agree. And for, as I've been saying, that's when the organizing should begin. Those are the people that you then pull in, and the solutions of, where do we go, come. As I've been saying, as we're moving potentially towards a recession, I hope Democrats are preparing, the Dwight D. Eisenhower tax reform bill, where we go back to a much higher tax rate on the very wealthy. We bring back an estate tax. We bring in a Wall Street transaction tax, where, if the suffering is going to hit 90% of the economy and the working people, maybe that 1% at the top, maybe they should feel a little bit of it as well.
Sure, we should do that. We should also try, they should be trying to pass legislation that increases spending for social programs. They should make the Republicans every time that they can vote against, expanding, Medicare, increasing the taxes on, the limit on payroll taxes, expanding, Social Security benefits for the elderly. They should make them vote regularly on those things. They should make them unpopular, because they cannot get away with saying that it's a populist party, and then they do things that are against the people all the time. And they should be pressuring them in that respect. I'm sorry to say that I see most of the leadership of the Democratic Party AWOL. So the only person doing rallies that, are bringing people, and it's Bernie Sanders. Yep. And I don't think his age, recommends him as the next candidate for the party. So I'm concerned that what you said, that we need a Democratic Party with an agenda. That agenda is not clear. That will be an agenda that goes against what's being proposed by Republicans.
And look, as I said, I've had a number of listeners yell at me because, oh, you're just beating up on Democrats. No, I want them to do better. And what I said was, is they need to get out of Washington, D.C. They need to adopt a Republican district. They need to hold town halls in those districts. They need to do what Bernie Sanders is doing, going in certain places across the country, holding rallies, bringing thousands of people out, doing that grassroots organizing that desperately needs to be done, and then bringing in some of the people who voted for Trump. But they're not, the eggs aren't cheaper, the gas not doing that as great as it should be, and the wages not going up. There's an opportunity here.
I agree. It's not me, it's not you. Sherrod Brown said that in some parts of the country, the Democratic brand is toxic. And that's a problem because those parts are working class sort of, counties. So I think that's, I'm sorry to say, that's one of the problems, and I think that here what we're discussing today is where Democrats have a chance, because the Republican Party has no agenda that is economically for the people. The tariffs and the immigration stuff is what's seen by, I think, some working class people as something that might have a positive impact on their wages. By the way, I should say the immigration stuff might be, it's another element of a concrete thing that we already know it's happening. Construction is sort of, going down, and this to some extent is the result of the crazy ICE policies, which immediately have an impact on, in that sector. So again, that will have a chilling effect. I think, on the growth of the economy and so on and so forth. So I think that it's a very limited agenda. They're against workers' rights. They're against unions. They're against increasing minimum wages. So all of those things are things that Democrats should be pressing and would be pop. I mean, all of the, we talked about this during the election. These are all issues that when they were on the ballot, they won. They won in Republican districts. So these are popular issues, and Democrats are for those things. So the fact that they're not running on those things, that they're not having those things front and center is you know, mind-boggling.
Yeah, and they should be talking about it every day. It should be the, every word out of their mouth. Mateus, I appreciate you taking some time for us. As always, great information. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our good friend Mateus Vernengo. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, the wind picking up, a low in the low 30s. Winter weather advisory for tomorrow, snow, some mixed rain early, and accumulations of 1 to 3 inches. Heavier totals to the north and west with a winter storm warning. Gusts above 40 miles an hour with blowing snow. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Hi everyone, Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember several weeks back, we had a representative from the Wells Fargo Workers Union on the program talking about organizing bank branches across the country. And as I get now, it's up to more than 25 and a bunch more are in the pipeline and ready to come online. And you know, back in December, and this is kind of a big deal. It's going out, you know, organizing the bank branches is one thing, but back in December, the Wells Fargo Conduct Management Investigators, they became the first non-branch group of workers there to organize with the Wells Fargo Workers Union, which is represented with CWA. Which is kind of a big deal because these are the people responsible for intaking, researching, and documenting any allegations from anyone from customers to employees that have to do with the bank. Kind of a big deal. And here to share some thoughts on, well, the journey and what it took to get to this place and the journey the Wells Fargo Workers Union members have had. I've asked Cure Quadras to come talk with us. Cure is one of the investigators. Cure, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Rick.
So let me ask you this. Why? I mean, the first question I love to throw out there is why? What is it that made you and your coworkers go, you know what? We do need to come together. We do need to unionize. What was that?
There was a lot of issues going on within the bank that were concerning and alarming to us. One of them was the work that we do is special because we look at every complaint every complaint that a customer sends to the bank, it goes to us. Every complaint sent to the OCC, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, it goes to my group. And then also you get to the employee side of it. So the employees, every concern they allege against Wells Fargo or other coworkers, it comes to my group. And it's, you know, a lot of us have been with the bank for decades. Myself, 22 years, I spent 16 of it at the branch. So a lot of us had a lot of historical knowledge when it came to looking at these cases of sales practice issues, accounts opened without consent, discrimination cases from customers to Wells Fargo, from employees alleging racial discrimination, gender discrimination, you name it, against bosses and fellow coworkers. So we found out that our work was going to be sent to India And we knew that sometimes these cases had sensitive military information attached to them, because let's say a customer makes a complaint and, you know, and he might be sent overseas because he was issued, you know, orders overseas. So we need proof of that. So there's sometimes there's military, you know, documents attached to these cases. And when we found out that they were going to India, that, you know, that raised a lot of concern. So there was that. The other thing was work from home accommodations for my coworkers. They were being removed, not only for my department, but a company wide. So Wells Fargo was removing my coworkers' work from home accommodations against their doctor's orders. And it was across the company. So that was another reason. Our raises, sometimes we got them, sometimes we didn't. There was one time I went 3 years without a raise. And when we did get a raise, it was maybe 2 to 3%, if that. So when you see your CEO making a 7% raise, you know, year after year, he's getting more and more stock options, more money, and we're just pouring it into one CEO instead of taking care of the bottom guy, right? Other reasons was our healthcare insurance was expensive. I think Wells Fargo has also recently been in the news for overcharging on prescription drug costs. So there was a lot of it.
There's a lot. I mean, I was expecting the first one was enough for me. And it shows to me that, you know, wages aren't always the first thing, even though a lot of people, oh, they're just greedy. No, generally, the first words out of your mouth were, how do we protect this company from being itself? How you as a long-term career employee can protect this job so that you can have it and the company stays out of trouble? Because would it be safe to say if you had a stronger voice in the workplace, maybe they wouldn't have gotten themselves into a lot of the you know, the trouble that they got themselves into not too long ago?
Oh, definitely. And you know, and I had to live through a lot of that just working at the branch, high sales pressure goals. You know, I think a lot of us have PTSD from working at the branch during those times. But yeah, if we had someone that had our back and actually was there to review some of the, you know, the sales quotas they were making us go through, then we would definitely be in a better place. The bank would be in a better place overall. You see all the consent orders they're in right now, and a lot of it is for cutting corners and just putting, you know, their pockets, making them richer.
And putting intimidating their workforce. Because I have talked to some people who said, look, it was either I do it or they're going to fire me. And look, I got kids. I need the health care. I need this stuff. So, you know, they said it was okay. This is them. And turns out, well, in the company's interest, it wasn't the greatest idea. And ultimately that harms the employees. So when you guys decided this, you decided we have all these issues. They're not listening. Clearly, they have an open door policy, I'm sure, but clearly not answering any of these issues. You decided, hey, a union seems like a logical idea. Walk me through how this journey occurred for you guys. You know, what did you experience as you were going through this?
Well, you know, I got this bright idea in my head. I started helping out unionizing the branches, right? Because I used to work at the branches. And then I thought maybe I can talk to my coworkers and see how they feel about trying to start a union. So I personally called each and every one of my 42 coworkers at the time to see, you know, what their interest was in forming a union. Eventually, we got enough support. And then someone told on us before we were able to file our letter of intent to unionize. And then within a week, once we actually filed our letter of intent to unionize, we started getting pulled into a lot of captive audience meetings. They kept telling us that unions would not stop us from being laid off. They would send articles of people that were fired from a credit union for trying to organize. So there's a lot of intimidation practices. They told us that they, you know, wanted to deal with us one-on-one. And if we're with a union, that we wouldn't be able to deal with them, you know, one-on-one anymore. Tried telling us about the union being a third party. And we just, there was meetings where we had to switch all of our cameras on. If you had a camera and you were working, they wanted to see your facial expressions. Well, they brought Stan Sherrill on from the Littler group that they had hired.
A union buster.
To try to union bust us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. And this is classic of what employers do. But and again, not surprising that some scab ratted you out, because there's always one. And then the company takes that and they do exactly what Wells Fargo, it sounds like they did to you. Harassment, intimidation, captive audience meetings, firings. How many people got fired? Anybody?
Yeah, 11 of us. I was fired with 11 of us 9 days before a union election. And we were some of the most vocal, me and my coworkers that were let go. We would, I mean, we didn't just take those meetings, those union busting meetings, with a grain of salt. We fought back. We used our voices to combat all the anti-union propaganda. And I think we were just, you know, used as a pawn to try to scare and intimidate my coworkers from actually voting when our union election came up.
Yeah, so, and generally there's a chilling effect when that happens. I've done some organizing through the years. And when the employers break the law, as they did here, I believe, and fire someone, it generally sends a chilling effect across the bargaining unit. How is it that you were able to keep people, 11 of the members, sent the door? How is it you were able to keep that together and move forward on that vote?
You know, the day we were fired, it was really cool because Nick Weiner from the CWA union actually held a meeting with all of my 42 coworkers that wanted to show up because they were shocked, right? And let us come together as a group and discuss what happened to us. And it just made everyone more angry at the fact that they tried to fire us. So it just brought us together even more and made them want to fight.
Yeah, see, that, to me, that's the answer. And it's always been amazing to me when they do break the law and do something illegal, an unfair labor practice, an illegal firing, that the others don't go, oh, hey, wait a second, that could be me. That could be us, and then grab what it is they're trying to hold from us. It's always been amazing that people go the other way instead of rushing right into it. Now I remember last week they rolled out they reintroduced the PRO Act, the Protect the Right to Organizing Act, and you were the sole worker voice, as I understand, who was there supporting this piece of legislation. Can you talk a little bit about what the PRO Act is and maybe how you think it would have helped you and your coworkers as you went through your journey?
Yeah, the PRO Act is actually a great act. And I would hope that one day it will get enacted, but it's there to protect people when they're trying to unionize. It actually gives harsher penalties to people that try to union bust like Wells Fargo, because right now all they're going to get is, a little slap on the hand with all the ULPs that we have against them. It's just a more of a reputational risk for Wells Fargo and other companies. And this would provide more protections for workers that are trying to unionize and also prevent, big corporations from trying to union bust and maybe make them a little more afraid than what they are right now.
Yeah, the pendulum has certainly swung to the side of corporations. And I've said for a very long time, our laws are so badly broken at this point that it's almost malpractice for a corporation not to break the law because the penalties are so pathetically weak. Like when you were fired, did you get back pay? Were you able to collect anything, or did you find another job and end up it being a wash? Because the money that you earned was offset by what they would owe you. So the penalty for them was non-existent. But I'm curious.
I'm still looking for work right now. I was let go in October. We have ULPs. We filed 3 unfair labor practice charges against them. It's still in the investigative process right now. You said it. So if I do find a job, then it's going to be a wash for Wells Fargo. There's no penalties. They don't have to pay me pain and suffering, So, yeah.
Yeah, we most certainly need this. And for me, this is why every worker should have a union to deal with all the issues that you laid out. But also this idea of being fired at will for no reason whatsoever is one of those things that I just think every working person should get behind. When I look at this, I've had people who I know there are people out there right now going, well, Cure, if it was that bad, why didn't you just leave? Why didn't you go to another bank? Why'd you go somewhere else? If you wanted this, you should go somewhere else. Any thoughts, any response to that?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I started when I was 20 years old. I loved Wells Fargo. I used to tell people that, my car was the stagecoach. My grandmother, she opened an account in the 60s when a woman wasn't allowed to have a bank account without being married, right? So a single grandmother, or a single mother at the time, had three kids she's raising. And she told me this story that there was times when she was living paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes her checks, you know, would come in before she had money in her account. And there was this branch manager that would call her and say, Judy, you know, I got this check from, you know, the electric company. I see you don't have any money in there. When do you get paid? So she would literally hold my grandmother's check for an extra day so that she would make it, you know, pay her bills and be able to provide for her kids. So my family is all, for three generations, were Wells Fargo customers. And wow. I don't, why should I go to a different company? Why not make the company better? If not for me, for future generations. I think that was the main thing for all of us, was that, yeah, I could go to a different bank. I could probably make a lot of more, you know, a lot more money at a different bank, but I loved Wells Fargo and I believed in it, you know? So I don't want to just back down because they're making, you know, dumb decisions and cutting corners when I can try to fix it. Right. So that's why we stood up. And yeah,
that's no, that's for me. That's the right answer. Look, I want to make my life better, everybody else's better, yeah, and also make the company stronger. It doesn't have to be adversarial. You can hold both those thoughts in your head. But you know, I'm listening to your story about your grandmother, and I'm going, man, that's a different world. For a while they were getting in trouble, going, oh, grandma doesn't have any money. Good, get those lower amounts in there first. All right.
Yes.
Or get the big ones first so we can charge more going on down. That's a whole different world from where we are today, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
But I got to tell you, good on your coworkers. Keep up the great work and the fight. And I hope there are other bank workers out there who are going, you know what? We've got problems that sound just like Cure and her and her folks. We should organize. But Cure Quadras, I appreciate you taking time for me. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Sound familiar? Sound like maybe somewhere where you work, and maybe sound like the right solution is maybe we come together and we tell the boss we should be running this a little differently, a little bit better. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1930. That was the day that Mahatma Gandhi began his famous Salt March. The march was to protest British colonial rule of India and the repressive salt tax waged on the Indian people. Under British rule, Indian people were prohibited from producing salt. They were required to purchase expensive British salt that was heavily taxed. Gandhi brought international attention to this injustice with a 240-mile march to the city of Dandi on the coast of the Arabian Sea. Dozens of supporters of the cause began the march with Gandhi. As the march passed through villages, and more joined the trek and gathered to hear Gandhi speak. They reached the sea by April 5th. The next day, the marchers scooped up salt deposits from the shore in defiance of the British salt regulations. For the next 2 months, Gandhi continued to organize salt protests. He planned a march on large salt works, but was arrested before it began. In his absence, some 2,500 protesters picked up and carried out the actions. The marchers were brutally beaten by police. In total, 60,000 people were arrested during the campaign. Gandhi was held for more than 6 months until his release was negotiated. The non-violent civil disobedience of Gandhi and his followers were key to dismantling the British colonial system in India. Their courage also served as an inspiration to the labor movement and civil rights movement in the United States. A. Philip Randolph, the president of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, was one such labor leader inspired by the action. He planned his march on Washington to protest discrimination in hiring during World War II, in part based on the Indian example. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So some good news. The good news, you know, if there is any, is Democrats are winning in the courts. You know, they're filing lots of lawsuits. There are organizations filing lawsuits every day. And you know, to be honest, no winning for Trump in any of that, because they're on the wrong side of all this. They're literally breaking the law intentionally because they don't think that anyone's going to enforce it. And on Monday, you saw that National Labor Relations Board member Gwen Wilcox, who was fired in a way that no other person to the board has ever been fired. She returned to work on Monday in Washington, D.C. after a federal judge ruled that Trump firing her was illegal. And understand, this is a union-busting move. This is an anti-worker union-busting move. It's who they are. It's what they want. Last Friday, on March 7th, they stripped for nearly 50,000 TSA officers had their collective bargaining rights stripped away by the Trump administration as they continue what is an all-out assault on federal workers at every level. And understand, we all during the campaign, we said this was coming. This was their Project 2025 plan all along. I know they said, no, it's not. We would never, trust us, we would never do such a thing. That's not our plan. Who wrote this up? Wasn't us. We wouldn't do such a thing. And yet, you look at Project 2025 and you look at what they're doing, you know, for them not writing it, for them not doing it, for them not being responsible for it, for them saying not us, it kind of looks like them. I mean, this is union busting ripped right from the pages of Project 2025. And look, taken to a new level. There have been anti-union Republican administrations for years now, Reagan being the worst of them until now. When Reagan fired the Patco workers, at least you could make some argument that, well, it's in the public interest and public safety, and you know they weren't allowed to strike. So you could make something of an argument if you don't know the backstory that Reagan had basically told them, yeah, it's okay, go ahead. As a candidate, said he would support them, and then as president said, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's interesting how Republicans go to organized labor, go to working people and say, we're going to do all this stuff. We're with you. Trust us. Only to have in the moment that matters, well, I can't say what I want to say, but you get where I'm going. Working people get the shaft every time. And now you see the Trump Veterans Affairs Secretary announcing that he's approved the firing of 80,000 VA employees. Understand, the VA was already 50,000 employees short. So all those complaints about veterans not being able to get appointments and bad outcomes because there aren't staffing people there, that's only going to get worse. And in a big way. Another 80,000. Now understand, a large percentage of the people who work at the VA were veterans. They don't get paid what they would get paid in the private industry, mostly because these are people who believe wholeheartedly, have given their lives to this country, have sworn the oath and worn the uniform and done all those things. Those are the people who work there. They're taking care of their brothers and sisters. They're taking care of their fellow soldiers. And now you've got an administration saying, yeah, you were heroes once. We need tax cuts for rich people. And this is the part where, again, I keep coming back to, how many bad things does this administration have to do before we say enough is enough? Now, look, we got an election coming up in just under 2 years. Start organizing. We start getting into the streets. Look, I look at Bernie Sanders. Bernie is killing it. Bernie's out there drawing tens of thousands of people. He's out there holding rallies. 83-year-old guy. I don't know why the rest of the Democrats haven't followed my advice and adopted a Republican district and gone out there and done what Bernie's done. You know, they would find a receptive audience. Because if the one thing that Americans do well, the one thing we do great is we complain. When we're not happy, we let everyone know we're not happy. And I'll tell you, even my Red Hat friends, not thrilled what Red Hat Master's doing. They're not entirely thrilled. In fact, in my neighborhood, the flags have come down. The bumper stickers are starting to get scratched off. Not seeing so many people wearing the hat anymore. And the obnoxious level has fallen. So now this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for Democrats to go into those communities and go, look, did they tell you they were going to strip collective bargaining rights away from workers? Did they say they were going to do that? No, they didn't. Did they say they were going to fire 80,000 VA employees? Did they say that? And do you approve of that? Do you think that's smart? Do you think that's how we take care of our heroes? Now, here's my thing, and I've been saying this for years. I grew up in the 70s, where the guys from Vietnam were coming home, basically dumped into our housing project. Broken minds, broken bodies, horrible drug and alcohol addictions, just struggling, and left, dumped back in our... And this was my experience. This is what I saw. I can't speak for the rest of the country, but the Riverside Projects where I grew up, that's what I encountered. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, why would anyone sign up to do this? And when we went to Iraq the first time, I said, look, you know, okay, I'm going to go and do this. But the people who are harmed by it, we have to take care of. When we went into Afghanistan and then Iraq, I said the same thing. If you're going to do this, you've got a plan to take care of these people. If you're going to put them on the pedestal, if you're going to raise them up as heroes, treat them like heroes. Not just for photo ops, not just for good opportunities to smile for the camera, but with actual dollars and cents. And now we've got an administration who, look, Trump used veterans more than anybody. And his results a bit questionable. So I'm curious, is this where we wanted to go? Did we want to see half our government slashed and burned? Do you want to see the Social Security Administration with no one there to answer the phones? Because this is where we're heading. And I look at the fact that Elon Musk wants a government shutdown. Wants it desperately. Because in that, he can make his case. We don't need government. Because, well... The reality is they want to ensure that there is no one to hold them in check. They want to return to the robber baron era. They want to make it so government can do nothing, not just to stop them, but to make people's lives better. And I look at this moment, and all during the campaign, I was talking about this. This is where we were going to end up. You know, I had someone the other day ask me, did you see it was going to be this bad? And I said, no, you can never see how bad it's going to be. But I knew it was going to be highly coordinated. And I knew it was going to be fire hose nonstop. And that's what we've gotten. Lots of chaos, lots of diversion, lots of distraction, lots of misinformation, lots of sleight of hand. We really don't know. And understand, each of these agencies, Tulsi Gabbard, over at the National Intelligence Agency, pulling security clearances from past people who held that clearance. You know, the people who generally keep an eye on what's going on as a check. Yeah, we're pulling all of that. We're firing all of the independent watchdog groups. We're firing all the people who might have their hands on some levels of control to ensure chaos doesn't rule. And yet here we are in this situation where this anti-union administration is doing everything in their power to harm working people. I want to hear your thoughts. How's it going in your neck of the woods? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. As always, videofreespeech.org. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Previously classified files related to President John F. Kennedy's assassination have been released. CBS's Matt Piper.
The new documents have been posted on the website of the U.S. National Archives and Records Administration. More than 1,100 PDFs, some containing dozens of pages, and some which are still blacked out. The vast majority of more than 6 million pages of records had already been released, but President Trump ordered all of them to be that way. Many who have studied what's been released so far by the government say the public should not anticipate any earth-shattering revelations.
Astronauts Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore are back on Earth after an unexpected 9 months on the International Space Station.
And SpaceX Freedom, splashdown. Good main release.
Copy, splashdown. We see main chutes cut. Nick, Alex, Butch, Sonny, on behalf of SpaceX, welcome home.
Their capsule splashed down off Florida's coast near Tallahassee. Former astronaut